Chapter 6. Tommy. A 4.5-year separation is brought to a swift and lucrative end, though not to everyone's liking. I was so fucking dead set against meeting with Vince when Kovac brought it up, and so was fucking Nicky, who, little punk that he is, walked into the meeting wearing a t-shirt that had John written in big motherfucking letters on it. But the lawyers and managers tricked us, and told us that if we just met with Vince, he'd drop the lawsuit. They set up a secret meeting in a suite at the Hyatt off the 405 freeway. Nicky and I walked in with two big-ass attorneys and found Vince chilling in an armchair with his manager and two other attorneys. It was like fucking Millionaire Divorce Court or something. Their plan was not only for Vince to end the lawsuit, but for all of us to start recording together and being a band again. All these greasy fucking people wanted their money, and they didn't give a shit about us or our happiness. It was like Motley plus Vince equals cash. Motley minus Vince equals no cash. Vince had grown so fucking big since I last saw him that he looked like Roseanne Barr or something. His head was the size of a balloon, and folds of fat were billowing over his watch. He was wearing blue slacks with a short-sleeved dress shirt tucked in, and his body was a weird yellowy shade of brown that was probably a combination of liver problems from alcohol and sunburn from lazing around all day in Hawaii. It was about 4 p.m., and I was willing to bet my fucking tits that he was plastered. I don't think he really wanted to see us either, but he was practically broke between his daughter's death, his leaving his deal with Warner Brothers, the breakup of his solo band, his divorce, and the millions of dollars he owed on his Simi Valley home, after Charisse practically destroyed the place with parties. "I don't want anything to do with this guy," Nicky whispered to me. "If you want to know what uncool is, all you have to do is look at him." Nicky and I tried to be nice. I said something like, "Good to finally see you again, dude," which I didn't mean. And when he piped off like only Vince can and said something snide like, "Sure you are, buddy," Nicky and I hit the roof. "Fuck you, we're out of here," Nicky said and grabbed my arm. All the fucking attorneys reached for us with their greasy little hands like we were million-dollar checks walking into an incinerator. "No!" they yelled. "It took too long to get you guys together." "I'm going," Nicky snapped at them. "I don't need this fat piece of shit who looks like some reject from a Florida retirement community." Two attorneys grabbed Nicky and brought him in another room to calm down while the other two worked on Vince. It was like we were marionettes that had somehow rebelled and started thinking for themselves. They wanted us to be good marionettes and let them pull all the right strings. "If Nicky says one more word, I'm going to knock him out," Vince seethed with rage. None of us ever apologized, even after 2 hours of bullshitting. We told Vince that we had an album that was almost done, but we didn't have a singer. Our managers, Kovac for us and Bert Stein for Vince, kept trying to steer us closer and closer together, their collective slobber increasing as they realized that their cash cow might be producing fucking milk again. By the end of the meeting, I began to cool off and even come around to the idea a little. When a band that's been together for 15 years changes the main element, some people are going to get freaked out. I used to do interviews where I said we'd fucking break up if any one of us left the band because it wouldn't be Motley Crue anymore. So I understood why it was necessary. Though in my heart, I was happy with where we were going with John. Before we left, we scheduled the time for Vince to stop by the studio, promising to leave our baggage outside the front door. Though Karabi had officially stepped down from the band, we continued to work with him in the studio. On a Sunday, when Karabi wasn't scheduled to come in, Vince arrived. In my head, I kept repeating, "This is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong." But I didn't say a word because all our crystal-clear resentments and issues were supposed to be left on the doorstep, which I doubted was big enough to hold all that baggage. I tried to accept the fact that Motley Crue was four people: Nicky, Mick, Vince, and Tommy. With that in mind, the first thing we did was start removing Karabi's voice on each song so that Vince could re-sing them. After Vince left the studio that night, I called Karabi and took him out for sushi. I was fully crying. "Dude," I said as tears rolled down my cheeks, "I can't believe this is happening. They are really going to let you go." Karabi had given them an excuse to bring Vince back, and they had seized the opportunity and left him in the dust. I don't think he really wanted to leave the band. He liked singing with us, but he just couldn't take the contradictory pressures we were putting on him in the studio. He thought that at least he'd be able to stay on as a second guitarist and singer. "I'm sorry," I told him for the 10th time that evening. "I'm only a quarter of this machine. Fucking majority rules and the powers that be are making it happen. I just want you to know that this isn't what I wanted." It was a heavy day, dude.